All right, is it recording?
Welcome to Left and Leftists, a podcast that takes a skeptical look at politics when the right is wrong and you have nowhere to turn. Head on over to Left and Leftists. This is episode 20, and I'm your host, Coulter, and as always, I'm joined by my two co-hosts and a whole big old pile of adult beverages. First, we have on the left, Caleb.
What a debate, huh? Who's jacked? Yay.
I am voter who just decided who to vote for based on tonight's debate.
Yeah. My vote was up in the air until tonight.
There was one pretty lady who seemed like she might have better smile if she take mask off. I find out who that is and vote for her.
Well, as you can hear, we have our resident leftist who still has not made his decision on who he's voting for, even though he voted probably last week. We have our resident leftist, Sheldon.
Yeah, I turned in my ballot Monday? No, yesterday. I just brought it. I brought it to the post office, and all I did where, you know, on the top of the ballot, where's that big election with all those candidates that end in a rap star, I just drew a pitchfork. They'll know
perfect.
What I mean.
Perfect.
You voted for Satan. Perfect.
We still need to get the Satanic Temple on this show. Well.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. But we are going to get into the debate and this week's headlines and all kinds of discussions in politics. But first, we have to start with the leftist greed.
Dear Justice Department, I'm so glad you are finally annoyed with the tech industry's antitrust violations. And your suit against Google, aka Alphabet, aka Overlords of the Web, is just great. In case you can't tell, I'm being sarcastic. You stink. You are a bunch of senile, butt-tooth old mummies with bony girl arms in place of law enforcement balls, and you smell like an elephant's butt. Any opportunity to rein in or even moderately curtail the indisputable monopolistic practices of our big bad search engine daddy, it passed long ago. You see, for more than a decade now, the word Google has meant not only a noun describing a large number or perhaps a tech firm, but it has been a fucking verb, literally meaning to search the World Wide Web. And anyone who believes that kind of cultural permeation can be mitigated with this pissant lawsuit is laughably inept and probably hopelessly naive, and this includes those legal success geniuses who, at long last, brought action in federal court against Google last week. To me, this is reminiscent of what happened in 1998 with the long overdue lawsuit which prevented Microsoft from forcibly bundling Internet Explorer in any PC that was purchased by a consumer with the Windows operating system. By the time 1998 rolled around, Netscape didn't exist. It was one of only two viable alternatives for a web browser at the time. Microsoft had already completely disseminated its competition. And then the Justice Department decided to stop it from doing so ever again. Now, granted, within, what, say, 15 years' time, the terms of that lawsuit would lead to more viable alternatives for web browsers, namely Mozilla, but also, namely, Chrome. Google is also participating in the same practices with their Google laptops that Microsoft was prevented from doing in 1998. They've already turned the corner. No one ever brought suit against Apple for its abuses within its App Store. It's never going to happen. And if it were to happen now, it would be far too little, far too late. Just Google it. and find out for yourself. Since we're talking about tech, there's another couple little seeds in my teeth about the tech industry. Social media, completely dominated by one guy. Zuckerberg wants to turn the entire coast of Hawaii into his own private beach. And that is the sort of person who ought to be allowed to decide what sort of information is allowed to be disseminated on the world's, on two of the world's three largest social media platforms, Instagram and Facebook. And he also owns WhatsApp. And when Zuckerberg and whoever's advising him decides to throttle or promote any sort of content, that's what happens. Survey after survey indicates that people get most of their news and information, mainly, you know, in the boomer class, but still, put that aside. Most people who answer surveys are boomers, and they all say they get their news and information primarily from social media and primarily from Instagram and Facebook. And then you have Twitter. These two firms decided to do something outrageous last week when they throttled, in the case of Facebook, a post, a New York Post story, and in the case of Twitter, took the unbelievable step of stopping distribution altogether, going so far as to ban the New York Post Twitter account for an entire day. Whatever you may think about whether it's legal for a private firm to censor the dissemination of information, it is still institutional censorship. And institutional censorship on any level is grounds for totalitarianism. And private firms, especially United States private firms, by definition, are tyrannies. Do you really want them to have that sort of authority, where most people get their news from, get their news from Facebook and Twitter? You want to give them that authority? And the person who made the decision at Twitter happens to be one of these patronage economy operating douchebags named Andy something or other. He used to be the communications director for Barbara Boxer. He's, by patronage economy, I mean he's one of these guys when he's not working directly for the Democratic Party or somebody in the establishment, as in Senator Barbara Boxer. He's working for television producers. He's working for newspapers. He's working for fucking Twitter. We can't have people like him making those kind of decisions ever. And especially not when it rises to the level of universal institutional censorship. I don't want to make too big a deal out of it because, frankly, that New York Post story, the veracity of that story was only brought into question by the fact that Twitter and Facebook went out of their way to tell everyone not to read it. And as Hermione Granger brilliantly pointed out, in Harry Potter, I don't know, fifth year, I think, when the evil lady was... Anyway, she brilliantly pointed out the best thing that Twitter and Facebook could have done to make sure everyone read the Post story was to ban it. And that's just the court. That's just the sort of idiots that they are. And we can't give them the power of institutional censorship, because an unaccountable tyranny will always come for the left. That's always where it ends. So if we're going, we can't have Twitter and Facebook throttling the news at all. And that's the bottom line, because the leftist said so.
And now a word from our sponsors.
All right. So now we're back with the headlines this week. And it is Thursday night, the night we normally record. And it's 9 o'clock. So the final presidential debate is over. And Caleb, why don't we do a bit of discussion on what we thought about the debate tonight?
There was less shouting over each other. That was somewhat better.
That was somewhat better.
It wasn't. I don't know if it was better television this way, but it was more tolerable. It wasn't the train wreck that Americans have come to know and love.
As we've gone through this entire debate cycle, I feel like I've now watched three debates. I watched the first debate, the vice presidential debate, and then this debate. Plus, I watched the Joe Biden town hall. You watched the Trump town hall, which I think you thought was glorious. because, you know, the uncle.
I died.
Oh, the uncle comment was pretty good.
She called him the old uncle, and I literally died. It was really funny.
But the point I'm trying to make is that I feel like the three debates that we've had literally ask the same questions every single time. Would you agree with that? Was there anything new in this debate?
I mean, the final question, which is like, here, stick your stump speech here, kind of
stick your inauguration speech here.
Yeah, stump speech, inauguration speech. I mean, they sound the same at this point in the process. But yeah, there wasn't a whole lot. I my favorite takeaway from tonight was that Trump prepaid his taxes. And that was my belly laugh.
Hmm. How do you
like he called his accountant and was like, "Hey guys, I'm gonna owe some taxes eventually, so I'm gonna pay way too much this year so that I won't have to pay them several years down the road."
That's frankly like not altogether outside the norm. And the filing deadline for the prepaid is is October 15 of the preceding year. Of the fiscal year for which you're filing. So, I mean, yeah, you know, but it's uncommon for a failed small businessman, you know. In that case, it is uncommon. It's like, I'll just pay my taxes this year. The only revenue the man ever got, as far as we know him, the only actual revenue he ever got was, you know, when he was on television. And now he's on television getting revenue again. I wonder if he has to prepay this year. I wonder if he filed to prepay this year.
I don't know. I just feel like when we talk about Trump's taxes and you actually look at the taxes the New York Times released, it's like, dude, you were if these are true, you were literally the worst businessman in the entire world, period.
I'm sorry. We already knew that, though.
Yeah,
right?
But
we already knew that.
True, but it's just like to look at it on paper and be like, wow, you suck. But then, of course, if he's trying to get a loan, hold on. He's the best businessman in the world, and he's got the papers to prove it.
Well, no, but the only two people that would loan him money anymore were Deutsche Bank and Wilbur Ross, the guy who is now Secretary of Commerce. They were the only two guys left. Wilbur Ross was the only American institution which would lend him a dime.
Yeah, and Deutsche Bank is literally being indicted for, like,
money laundering,
massive money laundering, and lack of oversight during that period, which they loaned him money. Like it does not look good for Trump.
Back to the debate. Go ahead, Colbert.
Yeah, I would say back to the debate, and really all I have to say is that at this point, 47 million people have already put in their votes this year. I feel like this debate was way too late considering the dynamics of this election. If it was going to sway anybody, I mean, think about it this way. If you look at the 2016 numbers, we're almost 50% of the entire vote from 2016 has already cast their vote today.
It's below 40, but I mean, it's getting there. It's getting
more
there.
People have already voted in Texas than voted for Trump in its entirety last go around. That was a fascinating stat this week.
Harris County, though. You can't get to the one box.
Good God. Did they only do that in the one county, or did he get away with all of them?
No. Well, no. It was only for Harris County. It was only for Houston. It was only for them. It was targeted. We not used to it? Are we not amused? You asked this question, Coulter. I'll answer. There was something that came up, and I thought, who cares what I thought about it? But I found it interesting that given the format and given the sort of reins that were put on both of these wonderfully intelligent, genius individuals, where one of whom is going to be president for a little while, that they had an interesting back and forth finally on the Paris Climate Accord, and that Joe went on down the line with the president's usual, you know, BS about how much we had to pony up and how little the rest of the world was going to, and that's why we had to withdraw. And it was interesting to see how often Joe swallowed hard, because you could see him trying to get there, trying to recall precisely what it is. And not use the sort of simpleton rhetoric that we're so used to hearing from the president of the United States. But he tried. And I didn't think it was entirely without substance when he was talking about the Paris Climate Accord.
I love the part where Trump was trying to be like, you're going to destroy oil. You just admitted it. And he was basically
and
like...
And he said, yeah. Because
oil, that's what we need to do. Was what we need to do, right? And
yeah, but then, but this, I know this came on the heels of my least favorite thing where I've got to hear Joe, you know, rant about his liking fracking. I don't know. But if that didn't come up again, man, that would have been a good segment.
But they were going to make it come. Trump was never not going to make that come up, right? The thing is Trump was always through the entire
thing. Don't engage.
Totally all about personal attacks. I think there were one of my favorite gotcha moments, I guess, is when Biden did call him Abraham Lincoln. He's like, Abraham Lincoln over here. And I was just like,
that was good.
Well, yeah, but then
I thought that Trump had a good moment as well when he said, oh, look, there's Biden just looking into the camera, acting like he's going to save the world one family at a time, but he doesn't get anything done. I thought that was a good burn for Trump, too. I thought that was an honest, like, oh, man, that's
this one
really
you mentioned,
how his supporters see him, you know?
Yeah, this one you mentioned, Coulter, with Lincoln.
Yep.
The president won that exchange because Biden was being a literalist doofus. When he was like, Abraham Lincoln over here is like, who said I was Abraham Lincoln?
But to me, he won that
exchange.
I actually don't think he
rhetorically
did
he won that exchange because now there's Joe Biden. It was an embarrassing thing to say. And the idea that this man is more light-footed than like. All he can do is throw a meaningless jab, and on a rhetorical point, the president wins the exchange.
I don't think the president won the exchange.
If you can move
because
sarcasm over the entire country like that, you win.
Yeah, and I also think that...
But it wasn't sarcasm. He's a literalist doofus. The way he said it wasn't sarcastic. He was trying to insult him. No, he was just trying to insult him. He wasn't being sarcastic. Look, sarcasm is if you say this guy thinks he's Abraham Lincoln, that's one thing. If you say Abraham Lincoln over here, that's another.
I got the point, which he was basically saying that, you know, Donald Trump is basically saying that he's the greatest president since Abraham Lincoln, and every person, any human being with any half of a brain knows that that's a factual lie. The guy actually said, I'm the least racist person in the room when he was talking to an African-American moderator. I mean, come on.
But you're just piling on in the way that Biden just did, and it doesn't really work.
I guess.
The guy, he was elected president even though we all piled on.
Yeah,
I'm guilty of piling on.
I agree. Going into this election and this debate, we have a huge chunk of the entire country has already voted. Trump is down by 10 points. And you have to realize that Trump needed some sort of huge win to actually do something if it was going to be this debate. And nothing's going to happen because it's a debate. And there were no huge gaffes. There was nothing big. And so in the end, all they do is walk back into their corners and the election was the same place it was from the beginning. And that was the debate for tonight. Let's hop into some news. So this is a story that I really wanted to talk about. And the headline is COVID-19 related workers' compensation claims are denied by JBS. Now, JBS is a large meat packing and meat processing company. Probably they are actually the largest meat processing company in the entire world. They're actually based out of Brazil. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they have an American headquarters. That American headquarters is here in Greeley, Colorado, randomly. And this story.
Oh, it's so random when you talk about Colorado.
It really is. But
okay, go on.
This is something that really fired me up when I heard this story. I was driving my son to daycare. This comes up on NPR. And as we've said on the show, we do need to talk a bit about more about labor. And this particular story stood out to me because in the spring, there was a huge outbreak of COVID-19 at a JBS meatpacking facility here in Greeley, Colorado. We're talking, at the time, this was the largest hotspot in the entire state of Colorado. And this is a state of like 3 million people. This isn't it's not a small population. And this particular meatpacking plant was the center at the time of COVID-19 for Colorado. And during the, so we're now fast forward to today, and you have 6 people died in the outbreak. You have multiple people who are going to have life-altering conditions that are caused by it. And when they've gone to get their workman's compensation claims, they are systematically denying all COVID-19 claims, saying you can't prove that you actually got it at work.
You are so metrocentric, sir. You understated the population of Colorado by half. You said 3 million.
Denver Metro.
Yeah.
Denver Metro, sorry.
Which you're excludes right. Greeley, by the way.
It does. You're right.
You were so metrocentric. Yeah, there's about 6 million people in Colorado. Anyway.
Yeah. I heard you Googling that.
I knew it had to be. I actually thought it was 7.
Yeah.
So I would have overstated it because there are about 4 million people in the state of Utah.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, that can't be right.
Yeah, I was wrong. So, but the point is that anyway. I am right about this story in the fact that JBS is, first of all, it's bullshit that they're not taking care of their workers. And I think that this is something that we should talk about. Also, these workers in these meatpacking plants are the frontline people that are actually feeding America. This was an essential service during the height of the pandemic. And
after an initial nationwide shutdown.
After
a
nationwide
meatpacking meatpacking went down for 3 weeks in April, just completely shut down.
Exactly. And then they ramp it back up because they gotta feed the country, right? We have to eat.
Didn't they literally forced them, right? They said
pretty
you
much.
Have to
pretty
work.
Much. They said Hormel, you had to work.
JBS, yeah.
Foster Farms, Pilgrim's Pride, all those
the
guys.
List goes on.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Like for example, Pilgrim's Pride, which is chicken processing, right? They're owned by JBS. I mean, JBS is huge. If somebody were to contract a very serious disease or illness doing the Lord's work and feeding this country, right? I think they should get workmen's compensation claims if they needed them.
The
and that
will come to Jesus moment.
Look, and so, there's a lot of things that go into this. Some of the overtones are, is the federal government going to, kind of indemnify these big factories and mega churches?
The National Labor Relations Board.
You bring
in
the Lord's work. But are they going to indemnify these big mega places that have a bunch of people stuffed into a tuna can without the proper safety? Are they going to indemnify them from any kind of lawsuit, from everything?
Well, the Republican Senate's trying to do exactly that. That's what's holding up. One of the big factors that's holding up the HEROES Act from being passed is the fact that the Republican Senate wants to put protection for big companies like JBS to make it so that you can't be sued for forcing your employees to come into work when they could get COVID.
This is boring as hell, but I'm going to insist that we stick to the facts here.
Okay.
We're talking about workers' compensation claims.
We are talking about a workers' compensation claim.
Okay.
But now they are, because they've denied those claims, they are now embroiled in lawsuits that because they're not getting their workers' compensation.
Well, JBS themselves can't unilaterally deny the claims. What they do is they fight the claim. So you know how workers' comp,
yes,
unemployment,
that,
you know how this works.
That's right.
Yeah. So the arbitrator, decided in favor of JBS. What I for one am pissed about, and the angle where I come from is what sort of monsters are challenging these claims? Why is it that we are so deep into the anti-labor attitude from coast to coast that there are standing arbitrators at every level in state courts and federal courts who routinely side with monster cocksuckers like JBS? Because that's what happened. The arbitrator simply decided in favor of JBS and didn't withdraw funds from their workers' compensation so JBS contributes to the workers' compensation fund. When they have to pay for out of workers' compensation, it actually comes out in part of their fund. And once their fund is depleted, they have to increase their contributions, right?
Yep.
That's how it works, because the state picks up the other 50%.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, how are we here? How did this happen? And that's, well, I mean, we can talk about why, but then.
Well, the why is because they fought it.
We wouldn't have any fun. No, I mean, why are we here? To where an arbitrator would rule in favor of JBS.
Well, and I've heard the other side of the argument, which I think is BS, because it's like, hey, if somebody's on a ladder and falls down, it's easy to prove it happened at work. It's a lot harder to prove that you contracted a virus at work. But here's the deal. Let's say you were forced to work in a plant where the gigantic hotspot was. JBS didn't provide the proper PPE for these workers that are packed together in a tuna can trying to process, you know, pork and chicken, right? Mm-hmm. And they didn't put in any types of procedures to protect anyone.
And so, Caleb would like this, 2,400 reports.
Yeah.
The number, like Caleb loves the numbers, right? So
unbelievable. That is a very, very large
501 number. Of them, one in five of them ended up being hooked up to a freaking ventilator.
It's just crazy. They're obviously going to fight this, and I assume that they're going to have to go find a scientist that, I mean, we can find out exactly where their COVID came from. It's called genetic testing. We've been doing it for a minute, but it's going to be expensive. And without their labor union, they wouldn't be able to foot that bill. And I think they're eventually going to win this argument, but a lot of useless time and money is being wasted on this because some arbitrators just being a fucking jackass or paid off or something. I don't know.
All I have to say is these people work their ass off feeding America. These people are majority minorities. They're Latino and African American employees, and for the most part, and they're just not disposable people. And I feel like that the way that they're being treated by JBS and by the Labor Commission is that they're treated as disposable people that are feeding us. I'm a dude who literally during this pandemic sat in my office in my basement and had really zero issues. The only fear I had was going to the grocery store with a mask on. And these are people that had to work in grueling conditions during the height of a lockdown, and they were the people who were feeding America, and this is how we treat them. These are the first responders people are talking about. These are the frontline workers and the heroes that we talk about, and this is how they're treated. I'm just pissed about it.
Yeah, I'm pissed too. Although you use the word hero, goddammit.
Well, they are heroes.
JBS is one of the big four. I want to say four, could be five. Big five packing companies that is... they're all being indicted for price fixing. Every single one of them. It is just an awful, terrible racket, and it starts at the top, and that's kind of why it's happening, is because there is just no one of any kind of scruples that has worked anywhere near a farm for any of those businesses in at least the last 50 years.
Yeah, again, like I'm glad that it might just happen, but man, God, isn't it too little too late? Because it's not just price fixing we've got to go at. I mean, they're literally in violation of every conceivable food safety and every conceivable animal rights.
Did you see the OSHA fine? Did you see the OSHA fine in there, Sheldon? OSHA fined JBS for this particular incident $15,000. So look out.
That will change their business practices.
That's going to change everything. I mean, the next pandemic, they're going to be fine. They're going to be absolutely prepared.
Yeah. Well, you just get tired, or at least I do. I just get tired.
I get like, really tired of it too. Because I mean, think about this: the Purdue Pharma settlement that came through today. I know that this isn't on our list of things to talk about for today, but this is the latest
Purdue Pharma settlement.
Well,
they're not done.
The latest one today is bullshit. They're going to pay $8 billion, dissolve the company, and then create a new company that the future profits are going to go to paying the families that were affected by it. But here's the problem. No one is being criminally charged for personally making money from the marketing of opioids. The Sackler family is essentially going to take their billions and get off scot-free is bullshit.
Of course not, because there's no such thing as official corruption in this country. Bullshit. There's simply no such thing. And the minute you admit that there is, everyone goes to prison.
It's bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah, what are you trying to wreck the economy, Biden?
Oh, no. Like, hold on a minute. Hold on a minute, because Joe Biden's on the list.
What? When was the last time a big executive really went to prison? When was the last time you guys
can
remember? Oh,
man, the Enron thing.
WorldCom was after that.
I don't remember whether the WorldCom prosecution happened before or after Enron.
It happened because after. They did go to prison.
Those Enron, but hold on. Some of those Enron executives insisted on the trial, and I thought WorldCom all pled.
They pled, but they did go to jail.
Are we just going to forget about Jeffrey Epstein?
No, but Epstein can go. He wasn't hitting.
Hey, oh, little girl.
Okay, wait a minute here.
Is he not an executive that went to prison and died there?
No, because he wasn't. He didn't go there because he was an executive. He went there because he was a pedo.
Oh, he was an executive. He had lots of businesses.
And being an executive shields you from being a pedo, evidently, for 30 some years until finally you piss off the wrong person and you finally end up. Well, let's not get too detailed into what happened in that jail cell because
all right.
Yeah, no, Epstein, I agree though. I agree with you, Caleb. Epstein should have been in prison for his business activities long before we found out he was a pedo. Could have saved a lot of young women's lives.
What about Bernie Madoff? Does he count?
Yeah, well, Madoff was the same. Well, he literally ran a Ponzi scheme. See,
yes, exactly.
Epstein.
You have to literally run the definition of breaking that particular law to go to jail.
Yeah. Uh-huh. True story.
Yeah, but it's kind of one of those things where when we look at 2008, they should have put a lot more people in jail, and the only one that went to jail was Bernie Madoff, and that's because his house of cards came crumbling down.
Right. It's because he stole from other wealthy people, not just
exactly.
Folk.
Exactly. The other wealthy people needed their blood. All right. So our next story is Justice Department lawyers say that we can't find the parents for 545 kids separated by the Trump administration. This did come up in the debate tonight, but I also think that this is a headline we should be talking about considering how awfully egregious this is. So I'll let the leftist start here.
Oh, me? You don't want to hear what I have to think about this. The idea that we're detaining children started with the deporter in chief, Barack Obama. And that's it. That's all I have to say about it.
So eventually
they're going to lose kids. Eventually, once the policy is in place, you're going to lose children. There's no way that our detention apparatus could possibly be built in a way to keep families safe, to keep children safe. It's designed to punish people and to make them feel horrible and to dehumanize them. And eventually you're going to lose children. That it didn't happen while Barack Obama was president and it was his DHS, to me, doesn't matter. It's part of the same grueling, disgusting system that anybody goes into a cage for having violated immigration law. So there you go. They lost a few kids. Of course they did. No shit they did. It's horrible.
They literally kidnapped 545 kids.
Well, let's talk. Go ahead.
And sent their parents back to this country and then held on to their kids. That's fucking kidnapping.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable. It's criminal. That's absolutely criminal. And I just don't know what else I could possibly say about it other than it's one of the most despicable things and will go down as one of the larger black marks on this country for a long time.
What do you guys think of the story where they talked about Sessions and the Justice Department basically saying we have to separate the children, and they knew it that they were going to do it, even though they were playing dumb the whole time? Yeah, did you guys read that story?
That's just is everything that happens. We'll just
he said
play
so.
Dumb.
Jeff Sessions publicly said so. I'm not sure what you're getting.
I remember when he was trying to give Bible quotes to justify it when people were asking about it during. But they were talking about this article was specifically talking about how him and what was the second in command that was doing that was in charge of the Mueller investigation. His name is slipping my mind right now.
Rosenstein.
So Rosenstein. Thank you for.
And I just had to say his name. Thanks very much.
You're welcome. But the point is that Rosenstein and Jeff Sessions were behind the entire child separation policy, specifically in the planning stages, and they were basically like, we have to separate their children. Like, it wasn't just like, you know, they tried to play it off as this is part of the system and this is the thing that we had to do, you know, that had to happen as part of our process, and that we didn't mean for this to happen, when in the end there were reports that came out just this week showing that they intended to separate children from the beginning.
It wasn't just this week. I'm sorry, it wasn't. Jeff Sessions was out there publicly saying so at the time. You use the quote, we have to. That was something Jeff Sessions publicly said. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm with you. I'm with you. This is like for it to just go away, that's not fair. I'm not saying it should just go away.
So my question is that what do you think they should do for these 545 children that they don't know where their parents are? How do you solve it?
Bring their parents to the fucking country. Find them and bring them here. Put them up at the freaking Radisson Suite. Take the 54th floor of Trump Tower and install them there. Let them live, you know. Let them go out into New York City and find jobs and shit, you know. But that's what they were coming here to do, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, just take people's property.
I get it, but let's say their parents went back to, you know, like El Salvador and disappeared.
Both of their parents were deported.
Yeah, right. The reason they left, was because they didn't want to be there.
And they didn't want to be there because they were fear of death from gangs that they were going to be killed, right?
In many cases, yeah. And the government's inability to protect them.
In all reality, the chances of us as a tax-paying nation paying for the rest of these children's lives is very high.
Well, of course, like, but
at this point, the spotlight is too big. I don't see them just being washed under the rug and just let out into society. We'll be paying for them one way or another for the rest of their lives.
And of course, we ought to. We have to be. We're on the hook. I think we're on the hook for their entire families.
Agree, but I would say that only happens if Donald Trump's not the president.
You think that a Biden DHS is going to do anything right by these kids?
So you're saying that Donald Trump DHS is going to do anything right?
Oh no, absolutely not. Like, what are we you say that's the real world to have those sort of discussions. But the real stark reality is this system is brutal and cruel and has fucked these kids in perpetuity. And there's nothing you can do with your ballot to reverse it.
I don't see that. I see that, and here's why I don't agree with you, is I do think that it's too big of a political hot button issue that even if Biden is elected and put into power, he can't not do something about it because essentially he would look inhuman to not do something about it.
Yeah, it's an automatic political win to be like, but remember those kids that, you know, my predecessor kidnapped away from their parents? Well, here's what I'm doing about that. That's kind of political capital that you just don't walk away from.
But the last time,
and I don't
like
want
this,
to sound callous that he's doing it just for political capital, but It is really big political capital.
But you're saying that he wouldn't do anything. I mean,
he won't do right by them. There's no chance of reunification. Get their freaking folks back into this country, you reunite them, put them up in a position where that they can actually live their lives. That's what we owe them.
If we get the opportunity to do that for half of them, I think we will. But I don't think that opportunity is.
It won't even be considered. Like, go beg their parents to come back to the. And look, the last time something like this came up, I don't know if you remember fucking Elian Gonzalez.
I remember.
Any of you remember that shit?
What a shit show.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Now we have 545 Elian Gonzalez's.
That's really funny. We really do.
That's really fucked up. And the last time this happened, it was Slick Willie in the White House, and he just blew it up. Yeah, he did the worst possible thing.
Elian Gonzalez, didn't he have one parent here and one parent there though? Wasn't it?
No, he came here. He was here by himself. I think he had an auntie or something. He had an abuela or an auntie.
Yeah, he had family here that was trying to keep him here.
So-called exile community.
Yeah, exactly. But the problem with these kids is they have no one. They have no
parents.
They have no aunts.
Exactly.
They have no aunts. They have no uncles. They have nothing.
So it's even worse.
It's even worse.
And there's 540. I'm sorry. Look, I know. I want to shit on your parade and make it seem like nothing will ever change. But that's how I feel. That's what I think about it. That's really what I think. I think it's impossible. Like, there's nothing you can do by voting to get it done.
I think one president makes their lives like very significantly better off.
That's perhaps true, but you still have to kick the man's ass. And if we think we're going to elect Joe Biden and let him go do the work, we're stupid. We have to kick his ass to get it done.
Yeah, well, I pretty firmly believe that there's a large Mexican population in Texas that's going to motivate most politicians to do shit like this.
Yeah, and also, Caleb, you bring up a good point. Like, who gives a shit who's in the White House? Because in the end, DHS policy is going to be dictated on the ground. And whether people tolerate these assholes running around kidnapping children and putting them in camps and behind cages...
I think the Department of Homeland Security shouldn't even exist. So,
right. But it takes local resistance.
Yeah,
like national resistance is bollocks. It's useless. So, like, and you make a good point, Caleb, when you say there's a large Hispanic population in Texas.
They're growing in number, and they are growing in.
They're growing in activism. Yeah,
and to be politically relevant, they're going to be a force. Very, very. I think by the next national election, those people will be sought after one way or another. Instead of talking about the fucking 18,000 jobs in Pennsylvania and their goddamn fracking, they're going to be pandering to try to win that Mexican vote in Texas.
Well, the next national election's in 2022, and the key here, and this is something that you look at when you look at elections, right, is that whoever wins the White House during a big transition. So, for example, let's just say Joe Biden wins the White House, because we don't know that.
Let's not just say it. Let's just say it happened.
We're going to assume it happened, right? Okay. In 2022, they're going to be defending the Senate and defending the House, and that's going to be an uphill battle.
Who's they? Hold on. Who's they?
The Democratic Party's
not winning the fucking Senate.
No,
not this
agreed.
Year.
It's not going to win the Senate.
The best case scenario is 50-50. The very best case scenario, because I mean you're all.
Oh,
I know,
oh man!
I know,
let's do some gambling.
Okay.
Let's do some gambling before we do.
I'm gonna break it down for you. I've got it all laid out for you, and it'd be really quick. Bullitt can't win. Hickenlooper is a shoo-in because you don't live in a swing state as much as you like to say so. He hasn't been a swing state since Trump was elected. Ernst is going to win. Collins is going to lose. Doug Jones is a complete write-off. He's not even going to get 40% of the vote. Absolute waste. McConnell's going to beat McGrath,
and Harrison's going to lose to McConnell in South Carolina. Not McConnell. I already said McConnell. Graham. Graham's going to win South Carolina. And Arizona. Arizona is probably going into litigation. Arizona will probably be called against McSally. And
it's down 9 points. That's a huge deficit to give up.
So what? Forget about that. It's a presidential election.
Nine points.
Nine points in this region of the country, you ought to know, doesn't really mean anything because
wait,
the president,
who are we talking about?
We're talking about McSally.
Arizona.
They don't like her in McSally is not liked in Arizona at all.
Let me finish, though. Her opponent's
McSally
weak as
loses.
Well. Her opponent is weak as well. I think that race is going to be called for the Democratic challenger when it is called, and then there will be a recount, and it will be litigated. And I don't think that Senate seat is going to be seated for a while. So now we're at 51. Now we're at 51-49. And you all haven't talked about the Georgia special election. And that's where... there's not going to be a general election decided on Election Day. If there is, that's where we get to 50-50. If we get rid of the owner of the Atlanta WNBA team, whose name just came... Loeffler. If Loeffler, see, this is the thing. I can't remember the name of her opponent who's going to win on Election Day, but he's not going to get 50% of the vote because Joe Lieberman's cocksucker son is also in the race. It's a jungle general on November 3rd, and a fucking Lieberman is going to get about 2 million votes just because he's called Lieberman. And it's going to send the thing into a runoff in January. And that's where I'm afraid that the turnout won't favor the Democratic Party. So at best case scenario, I just ran it down for you. The leftists just ran it down for you. 50-50. That's the best case scenario. You get Collins, well, you lose Jones. I don't think Bullock wins. I think McSally eventually will have to cede. And you might get Georgia.
I think
we might get the Georgia because Loeffler is that toxic and bad a person.
I think that you are the... I think that Bullock loses. I agree. I think Harrison's going to lose as well. I'm going to be the cynic in me is going to say that. I do think McSally doesn't come as close as you think it is going to happen. I think that she, I don't think it gets litigated. I think she loses by multiple points in the election. She lost to Kristen Sinema, who's an open lesbian or bisexual.
Wait. Did we
No. Go ahead.
Did we
go
decide ahead, Tom Tillis is losing, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. North Carolina. See,
that one's close.
That's another wild card. And we've got Funny Man in the saddest sexual misconduct scandal since
Tom Tillis.
Since
he's
who knows?
Just such an asshat. I can't believe he can win.
But the guy he was up all the way along.
Yeah, has already fucked it up. He's already got a sexual harassment, something or other.
It's not harassment.
He was cheating on his wife.
Affair, and it's really Cunningham. His name is Cal Cunningham.
That's right.
Is there any more Carolina name?
He pulled a Boehner and sent some dick pics.
He didn't send any dick pics.
He was just texting with his assistant. How much he loves
with whom
her.
He's having an affair.
Yeah.
And actually, the salacious emails, the salacious text messages were between her and her friend. Well, let's not get into it. But that's where the salacious, like, but the emails, the text messages
maybe
between her.
Maybe we should get into it. What's going on?
There was the exchange between Tom Tillis,
I just remember thinking that Tom Tillis was going to win solidly like 2 months ago, or Tom Tillis was going to lose.
Yeah, Cunningham and then,
homeboy fucked it up.
And man, again, it's well, I mean, I don't think it's going to hurt him because the polls seem to indicate that since the whole scandal erupted, no one has changed their mind. But it's going to be tight. It's going to be tight. So one of those two. So I'm calling one of those two for the Democratic Party. That's how I get to a tie. That's
Who,
how
that
we get
one
to
in
a 50-50 tie. No. Collins is done.
Yeah, she's done.
Collins is done. Collins
that
is
one.
Going
and which
to lose.
Other one are you calling?
Well, there's Hickenlooper, and I think eventually Hickenlooper's
a gimme.
Yeah. Well, of course. So because that's not a swing state. That's not even an election.
Yeah, you're not even a fucking swing state anymore. Take away swing state status.
Fine. I live in a blue state. I love it.
Okay. But yeah, and I think McSally's opponent will be seated in the end. Her name, I don't know. But okay.
Kelly.
So Kelly?
I'm okay. Going with 51-49. And that's
for the
my
Democratic
bet.
Party?
Yep. Yeah. And you're going to do 50-50, which is still.
So who do you have? Who do you say, though? Do you think both the Georgia special, they oust LaFleur and Cunningham wins? Or do you think Ernst is going to lose?
Or
do you think Bullock? You already said Bullock's going to lose. So,
yeah, but I'm going to go with I don't know who the other one's going to be because some of them are so close of toss-ups that you don't really know. I don't know who the other one's going to be, but I'm just going to go with 51 just so that I can bet against you, Sheldon.
And Caleb.
Beautiful.
Caleb?
Yeah, I agree with Sheldon.
You're going to go with 50-50?
I think that we
what
get,
about 50? You got to go 51-49 Republican at this point.
Fuck.
No,
the
you
problem
don't.
Is that's
you
where the safe
to.
Money's at. Do we really think we're going to win two Georgia seats? I mean, come on.
No, I say maybe one. I'm
yeah,
saying
see,
maybe
I say
one.
We lose both. Fine, I'm doing it. I take 51-49.
But then you also have to put North Carolina in Tom Tillis. You have to say Tillis.
Oh,
wins.
See, I can't do that. I like the 50-50.
Tillis, Ernst, and I can't even remember the name of the sitting senator against whom Bullock is running.
Steve Daines in Montana.
Is that his name?
Yep. He
that's
loses.
Really, that's
Bullock's
really
going to
cool.
win for sure.
So, well, now you're on 52-48, perhaps. Why not go 52-48? I'm trying to push you.
I think 52-48 is where Caleb needs to land.
52-48 for the Democrats. You're going to give us.
I
you're
say
going
Tillis.
To give the Democrats,
I say Tillis loses. I
Cunningham,
say Arizona, North Carolina, Montana. That's it.
What about Maine? And
oh,
Colorado.
And Maine.
And Colorado.
And Colorado.
Colorado, obviously. So there you go. You've got five, and Doug Jones is done. So that's 52-48 for the donkeys.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, one of them's going to lose.
according to
your buddy Nate Silver, who called such a great election last time.
Oh, yeah, he's awesome.
He's awesome. He says it's a 74-100 chance that they get control of the Senate.
Fucking
but,
idiot.
God, now that I look at
but his
it,
range,
I don't know,
his
dude.
His range though is 48 to 55 seats or an 80% chance.
Fucking idiot. Don't even listen to it. I mean how anyone could listen to that retard.
I know, but now that I'm looking
that
at
that moron. Okay.
They say
the average,
you're fine. He says that the average for all of the scenarios that they ran was 51.5. So it's gonna land anywhere between 50 and 51. Which you can't.
51
so.
And 52. 51 and 52.
Yeah, 51
no,
and 52. You're right.
That's right. Can I just take 51.5 and you guys go over under?
Fine. Fine.
The over under on the number of Democratic senators is 51, and I'm staking entirely on the under on that.
Okay, now the question is, what does the loser have to do? Because we're men, and we all play fantasy football. What is
do
the
this podcast sober.
Oh, that sounds
that's fucked up. That's low blow.
Sounds awful.
The two losers have to record on what day is that? November 5, sober. Deal?
Deal.
Deal.
Wait, some of these aren't going to be defined by November 5.
Oh, right. Once we know, actually, and I actually, yeah, and I said outright, like, I think at least one of them
you
will
think
be
Arizona's
will end up,
going to,
I think Arizona will be litigated. I think there's a chance that Georgia will actually be called for the leading Democratic contender despite Lieberfuhl, and then that will be challenged by the LaFleur campaign. So, yeah. Yeah, November 5, it won't happen. Once it's decided, though, on that Thursday, right?
Okay, fair. Okay. I'm in.
All right.
Next story. I don't know how we got there, but that was fun.
It was fun. Next story is going to be that the Associated Press, they have now put out a article, which we have talked about on this show time and time again, and so I wanted to push it out because This is the Associated Press, and it's not The Intercept, which I think The Intercept is a fine news organization, but it's not something that most people read, I would say. And so the AP says that most people that are arrested during all of the protests that we have are not leftist radicals. Shocker to just go after what we've been saying since the beginning. And that's all I wanted to say about that.
Yeah, this means, in my opinion, that even the fascist police can't find reason to round up the left.
Yeah.
To actually look at arrest statistics the way the AP will and act as though that's like some part of the narrative, which I dispute, but to act as though it's part of the narrative and even they come up with, hey, they're mostly arresting right wingers. Even arrest records indicate that. Yeah. Yeah.
Shocking,
right?
The militia guys who think they're helping the police and have the support of the police.
They're arrested more often than the left. Yeah.
Yeah. Because they're the agitators, right? They're the ones that are starting these fights. They're the ones that are out there actually being violent in the streets, doing the burning and the looting, right? But according to the right and Donald Trump's of the world, it's the Antifa. So
Where
is this Antifa that they're arresting? Yeah, where's this Antifa that they're arresting?
Of course it's not, right? Caleb.
Yeah. Yep. I agree with what you've said. What do you want me to say? Of course.
Yeah, just pop this off.
I mean, yeah, they're fuckers. I hate them.
No, he doesn't like the Antifa. I get it.
What do you want me to say? Like the people on the right are literally like asking to create a civil war and of course they're getting arrested.
Update on the biggest asshole of the right, Kyle Rittenhouse. Evidently the state of Illinois is not going to press weapons charges against him as he continues to fight extradition to Wisconsin to answer for the murders. Illinois is not going to bring charges against him.
Is it up to Illinois? I thought that would be charges coming from Wisconsin.
No, well,
I guess it could go either way.
Wisconsin also has a chance. The Fed should be charging him.
Yeah, he crossed state lines. They should be charging him with federal.
He violated weapons laws in both states. So,
which then makes it so you could get federal weapons charges at that point.
But yeah, so Illinois is not going to charge him with anything, essentially. So he gets to sit there and fight his extradition without having to appear in court.
I just think that's more to... We should see if the Attorney General for Illinois is up for re-election. At this point, he's probably just like, my name's Paul, and that's between y'all. I don't want to get involved.
Well, no, exactly. No, he's almost certainly not up for election. Otherwise, someone would be kicking him around in the press, or her, perhaps. Almost certainly not, because look, pandering to gun rights advocates, if you will, in Illinois, that doesn't sell. It doesn't sell on either side of the aisle, really.
It doesn't sell to anybody but gun rights activists, right? And they're a very, very... I heard an amazing stat today, which was talking about gun ownership in America. And this was a crazy thing that I heard. 3% of Americans own 50% of all the arms in the United States.
I thought we'd already been over that at some point.
We haven't talked about gun... We've talked about gun stuff, but we've never actually
I thought we tossed it out at some point that, like... You know, there are 2 million people in this country who have 75 million guns.
Yeah.
Or, you know, something to that extent.
Well, when they talk about, so there's actually a group, a right-wing group called the 3%ers. And this is...
Yeah, they're very active in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, and 3%ers are actually very loosely organized. They're not like the
Patriot Prayer or the Proud Boys.
Yeah, they're not like them where they're like very organized and have chapters. This is more of like they just kind of take on to this name called the 3%ers. And it has nothing to do with that actual stat.
Of course, I know it doesn't. Their entire thing is that 3% of people... Go ahead.
3% of people who are armed could basically take on the government and take over the country.
Because it was 3% of people who bore arms against the British.
Exactly.
That's the lore.
That's the lore.
That's the lore. That's their big story. Oh, it's so neat. We're so awesome, folks. 3% of people overran the British and got them out of the United States and secured our independence. It's so wonderful.
Well, and these guys are sitting around on their like little walkie-talkies talking back and forth to each other. And the shit that these guys are saying to each other are things like, you know, they think that they're helping the police. They think that they're in with the cops and that they're being supported by the police. And in the end, they're just a bunch of right-wing vigilantes who think that they're so amazing. And to be honest, they're the ones agitating peaceful protests in this country. And at least it's nice to say that they're the ones that are mainly getting arrested.
Yeah, you say that, but again, I go back to my initial objection. All right, all of the agitation, all of the agitators, all of the violence is from either the police or the right wingers. All of it. If you exclude property damage, which is not an act of violence, in my opinion, if you exclude property damage, all of the agitation comes from the right wing. And so if you look at the arrest statistics, I guess like most of them aren't left wingers. Yeah, none of them. Are left wingers. None of them. No one has been legitimately arrested, in my opinion. Literally no one. Because the one guy who should have been arrested was just shot dead in the street. The guy in Portland who shot the Patriot Prayer douche. When the marshals showed up, they just shot him dead.
Yeah.
Anyway, whatever. I mean, that's my take. That's my take. So, I know I'm a bit extreme for the two of y'all, but... But
I'm just saying this headline doesn't. It's. I don't understand how it's news.
It's not. It just is. the reason that I wanted to put it here is that it basically it is part of my bubble and it verifies my worldview, and And it's from.
I agree. I too like it when my echo chamber's back.
Yep, and it's from a general news source.
Echo chamber's back? My chamber echoes back. You know what I mean.
Yeah, it's my echo chamber one that I wanted to listen to. It's time for Zimmerman's Playhouse! That was a very forced transition, guys.
Woohoo! Yeah, What do we have for Zimmerman's Playhouse?
What's going into Zimmerman's Playhouse, Coulter?
Well,
don't
you know
do
what's
it.
Oh, don't do it. I was going to say, Donald Trump needs to be in Zimmerman's Playhouse.
Okay,
fair enough. I like this one.
Fair enough.
The reason is that, first of all, he was told that his dog whistle is a foghorn. And second of all, just for the comment alone that I've done more for black people in this country better than any president since Abraham Lincoln.
More than any single person, than anyone else.
Anyone else. I'm the biggliest when it comes to helping black people. And if we all remember... when we remember in 2016 when he told people that he loved Mexicans and he held the burrito up. Remember the burrito picture?
All right. We're talking about Zimmerman's Playhouse, right?
Yep.
We're saying Donald Trump is a racist, right?
Yes,
let's
we
not
are.
Be silly. Let's get to the fucking bones of the matter then.
Fine.
He and his father Fred were sued by both the state of New York and the United States government for redlining inside their little Queens development.
Totally. 100%.
His first public act was to take out a full page ad in the New York Daily News in 80 something or anyway, calling for the execution of the Central Park Five. Five young black men who were wrongfully accused.
Yep.
Right? That was his first public act. And he even put up a billboard.
He kept that up for a while, man.
He kept it up for a while. He just keeps going and going and going.
And still says it even after they were proved innocent. Still stands by it. Doubles down on it. He does. He still doubles down on that.
You know, you're right. No, but then my brain goes to freaking Biden tonight. And I'm just like, oh my God, him too. But hold on. We're not talking about Joe Biden.
We're not.
Right?
We're talking about Donald Trump.
We're talking about Donald Trump. And so someone else chimed in. So come on.
And then once he became the big league,
we're in the big league, folks.
We are. Once he became the president, and we were talking about the protest where they were all very fine people. I think that that was his first real big situation where.
No. Before that was the drug dealers and the rapists.
Yeah, they're not sending their best, folks. They're sending people who have a lot of problems, right? You remember the escalator speech?
Muslim ban.
Yeah. Yeah. Shithole country.
Shithole countries.
That was a good one. Shithole countries.
So.
Yeah.
I think he publicly said he hates the Globetrotters.
Joking about the Trail of Tears. Kung Flu. And then birtherism.
Oh, birtherism is totally a racist dog whistle all day.
Well, not a dog whistle. He's saying that a black person can't possibly be an American.
It's a racist foghorn.
It's a racist foghorn.
And the second that Kamala Harris comes on to being on the ticket, the next thing that comes out of their mouths is they start pulling up birtherism right again. Right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So Kamala Harris, right?
He called a perfectly normal white lady Pocahontas.
Donald Trump. Once the Plaza Hotel and Casino were, and yeah, I might have my facts not entirely right, but it was early 90s. Someone hired an African American man to be an accountant at one of those places. And he literally said, "Black guy's counting my money? I hate it."
Seems pretty racist to me.
Come on. I mean, let's pile. You guys love piling on Trump. Come on. Where's all the? It happened literally on The Apprentice, if I recall. Screw the actual event that happened on The Apprentice. In like season 5 or season 6, reviews were lagging, viewership was down, and he pitched to NBC an idea that you would have 9 white people on one side and 9 black people on the other side. And that would be The Apprentice.
I remember that.
He pitched it in like 2005 or 2006. I mean, holy shit. he was on
the
Letterman.
Fact that he even thought he could do that and pitch it. Period.
He was on Letterman when he said that. Letterman challenged him. He's like, "You really think all Muslims are terrorists? Like, somebody's blowing us up. Somebody's blowing up buildings. Someone's doing lots of bad stuff. It's got to be Muslims." All the way back in like 2009 or two. I mean, it was Letterman. So literally, it was a long ass time ago.
Sheldon, you are pulling quite the list out of your head. It is amazing. I'm very impressed.
The man is president of the United States. Like, remembering all the bad shit that he's done and said, I don't know. Is it really that hard?
It's there's so much of it. It is kind of hard, right?
It's
like that moment when I get in a fight with my wife and I try to explain to her that thing she does that annoys me. And then she goes, "Well, can you give me a specific instance?" And there's so much of it, I can't.
Did we mention that his administration kidnapped 545 kids?
500, yeah, right. Brown kids.
And then sent their parents home to like these war-torn, shitty countries that they probably had legitimate reasons to get away from, and then just kept the children like come on, man.
Yeah.
Forced hysterectomies.
You can't just pin that. I'm sorry. That's one you can't just. You
he
can't
pardon
just pin
Joe
that
Arpaio.
Him. Oh, Pari. Oh, there you go. Arpaio. There we go. That's okay, Coulter. Go ahead and pin it all on him. It's okay. It's a pile on.
It's his administration.
The judge who was supposed to be overseeing the Trump University lawsuit, which he would settle well in advance of the election, because holy shit, you're just a fraud university dude. He said he should recuse himself because he was a Latino. And he literally said that he couldn't be fair to Donald Trump because of the wall, you know, like a federal circuit judge should.
We haven't even mentioned the fucking wall.
Yeah. And then there's the fucking wall.
He stopped Harriet Tubman from being on the $20 bill, a process that had been in motion for like the last 10 years.
Oh, the globalist thing. See, here we go. Globalist. Total stand-in for Jew. And he and during the 2016 campaign, he retweeted someone who put like a Star of David around Hillary Clinton's face with the tagline corrupt or some garbage like that. I mean, holy shit. Come on.
He tweeted that the freshman four should, quote, go back to their countries.
They're all very fine people.
Yeah, the very fine people. Oh, yeah. And anyone disrespecting our flag, you say to that son of a bitch, you're fired. He's fired.
Yeah. Oh, dude, the NFL? Come on.
Yeah, the NFL had to walk that back. I mean, it took him 3 fucking years, but.
He moved the date of his Tulsa rally onto fucking Juneteenth.
He had to move it off. It was originally scheduled for Juneteenth, and he moved it off of there. Yeah. And everyone from Haiti. Okay, everyone from Haiti has AIDS. Pocahontas. Come on. See, we're just.
Man.
Come on. What about the villages tweet? The villages.
Despite
place in town.
three of them actually being natural born citizens. He referred to Alexander Ocasio-Cortez, Ayanna Pressley, Ilhan Omar, and Rashida Tlaib, only one of whom is not a natural born citizen, as being from countries whose governments are complete and total catastrophe and they have to go back. I mean, in the case of AOC, holy shit, she's from Puerto Rico. That's a territory of the United States. I mean, she's not from there, but her people are.
Oh, dude, the entire way he treated Puerto Rico in general, after the hurricanes.
Oh, my God. Okay. Paper towels. Beautiful paper towels. They were thick and lovely.
Send this guy to the house. Come on. Let's send him to the house, Sheldon.
Hey, King Chief Cheeto, the oval orangutan, for the crime of being yourself, bitch. You may fuck all the way off to Zimmerman's Playhouse. And take the Oval Office with you. I don't give a shit for it. It probably smells really bad at this point. So, you can call me a racist for saying that, but that cracker motherfucker stunk that place up for 4 years. I mean... Holy crap.
He's getting butt rammed by George Zimmerman right now. So, are we going to talk about dumb Americans? I think we are.
For our science lesson for today,
what you're seeing and what you're reading,
we will continue our discussion,
is not what's happening,
of Darwin's theory of the descent of man.
This week in Dumb Americans... Another, like, just classic. We're really hitting all the big names today. Rudy Giuliani.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But, like, which story do we pick from this week for right? Rudy Giuliani?
You guys should see this film. It's good.
I cannot wait to see this film.
Can you believe people are still being punked by this fucking guy?
This is what I'm saying. Like,
how did he even do a part two?
How does Borat happen twice? And it's because people as stupid as Rudy Giuliani are in the world and like still sucking the teat of their like waning idea of celebrity. That's what's going on. But Rudy Giuliani, apparently in Borat, I haven't seen it. Can you break down the scene? Did you see it?
I like this article. Just kind of stick to it because it was cringe for me. It was total fucking cringe for me. But
so Giuliani is in a room with someone who's playing Borat's daughter, and he supposedly you see him with his hand down his pants, kind of talking up like. Why he's there or anyway, he's clearly confused.
He's sliding his hand.
Anyway, he's doing really cringy things and there's a 15-year-old girl in the room and then Borat comes in and make him look like a dumbass. I'm just saying, how do you fall for this? How How does Borat happen twice? My God.
I like that he was only trying to take off his microphone and tuck in his shirt.
Yeah,
right.
For sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So here you go. She's a 15. She's too old for you.
Yeah. And
I just want to know. I'm just putting this
out
there.
And then at that point, Rudy's like, dude, I just snorted that whole Viagra. It's like you can't unsnort the Viagra, bro.
I'm going to just put this out there. What kind of treatment do you think Rudy's used to when he goes to Ukraine, guys? What do think he's used to?
In the Ukraine?
Yeah, like when he goes to Ukraine,
man.
And he meets with these bigwigs. What kind
of treatment
do you think
cringe,
he's getting?
Speaking of cringe, God damn it, what a shitty thing to say.
I'm just saying, you know, like I'm your racist uncle, and I'm just forwarding this tweet, right? And I'm just saying that, you know, people are saying. People say that, you know, when Rudy Giuliani goes to the Ukraine, I think he's used to that kind of treatment. That's what people say.
Oh my God. What kind of treatment? Then CrowdStrike, CrowdStrike lives there. What kind of treatment do they get? I mean, I'm sorry, man. God. That's so cringe. That's so cringe. The idea,
going, oh my God. Like, because it just like starts clicking in his head and that's beautiful.
No, it's horrible, man. That, you know, I thought the Borat scene was cringe because the setup was so long. I mean, all right, you see Rudy Giuliani and immediately you want to switch his channel. So every second after that is like a fucking month, right? But, oh, man, what you just said, Coulter, you got me. I physically cringed when you said that. I'm like,
So I want to be very clear. I don't actually believe in the some people say is a newsworthy or even really thing to discuss, but I just think that, you know, the little Rudy against Rudy works well.
Well, Sasha busted him. Yeah, what kind of people? Jesus Christ. What kind of people are there? Okay. So, Rudy Giuliani.
You're dumb.
Hey, I'm phoning in the numbers. I really phoned him in, and I think we spent enough time, extra time, breaking down the Senate race this week.
Yeah, we really
did. So I think
we
should wrap this puppy up.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's wrap this show up so it's not 3 hours long. And the first thing we need to do is head on over to Patreon. That's patreon.com/leftandleftist. And give it any amount. Your support is going to help others find the show. No, your support's just going to help us keep doing it every week because your review is going to help others find the show. Man.
Yeah, get it right.
I got to get it right. I don't know what I'm saying. And Caleb totally thought that he had somebody that was going to call the left nest. He was on it and apparently didn't happen.
Oh, I tried. I tried so hard. I'm going to get him to call next.
But if you're listening to the show, you be the one. You be the one. Be the first left nest. Come on. Come on, I'm sick of begging.
It will be Vladimir.
It will
Vladimir
be Vladimir.
Will be the first to call left nest.
But hey, what about Abe? It could be Abe. 47 years ago.
Your Abraham Lincoln's just not as good as your.
He'll get it. No. He'll get there. No. Like, what are you saying? What are you saying? Bill Clinton has not been talking to us.
I do a really good. JFK saying things from Abraham Lincoln. So,
four score and seven years ago.
Like I enjoyed that one.
Yeah. So come on, call the left nest. That's 601 left nest. It's not it's even an easy phone number to remember. And so
LEFNEST.
Yeah, LEFTNEST. It's an extra letter, but that's fine. Left nest.
Left. It is left.
It's left nest.
Hey, actually, I think you missed a step there. Caleb makes a point. It should be the left nest. Yo.
I don't know. Wait. I don't know if there's an area code with the, you know. So.
Hang on. Is it 602 left nest?
601 left nest.
Left nest.
Does it have a T at the end? Is it nest or ness?
Well, you dial the T, but it doesn't matter. Yeah,
right,
the same.
I was confused.
Yeah. No, you
were. So confused.
Not really.
Left nest. And so give us a call. Leave us a message.
Yo, and no wonder no one's called. It ain't called the Left Nest.
Exactly. We're waiting. We will play them on the air if you leave all us right. a message. Yeah. So, and I don't care if you're a right winger listening to the show, which I doubt it. But if you are, go ahead. Leave us a message. We'll argue. It'll be a good time.
Yeah. Shoot your guns.
I don't know. Maybe we should do a live stream and have take live calls and see what happens. That could be fun. But
it would be awesome. It would be awesome. But I'm just thinking of some of my family and friends who might bother to call during a live call-in show. And I'm like, ugh.
Well, that's it
Why
for this
week.
Why
did I tell them about my stupid show? Hey, okay, write it down. Someone write this shit down. 50-50. I'm on 50-50. And these two psychotic optimists believe the Democratic Party is going to win the Senate this year. 51-49 for Coulter. Yes?
52 for Caleb.
Well, no, I'm just going, we're going over under 50.5. And I'm going over.
51.
Well, hold on, then I'm the only one under. Hold on.
51.5 was the over under. 51.5 was the over under, and I'm under, and
all right,
Caleb's
fine,
the over.
Fine, let's say 51 then. Let's say
51.5 was the over under. We're let's, going there.
Okay. All right.
So
all
me,
right,
so me
enough.
And Sheldon are on
so
the
we're
same
both
team.
Under, you know, it's going to be 51 GOP, and you're all going to be like, Jesus.
That's
that
still under.
Sucked. That election still under. Sucked.
Still under. All right, that's it for this week.
Okay.
And we'll talk to you next week on Left and Leftist.
So long, comrades.